What is going on, everybody? Passion the Christoph, a special episode, episode 50. I got a guy I really like. It's interesting. It's the author and publisher Jeff Burke, and I met Jeff about, it's coming up on 2 years, and Jeff and I have a lot in common. We look very different. Like, I probably look like the manager of a Jewish sports camp, and Jeff, I would say you kind of look like a roadie for Leftover Crack, the punk band, you know?
I've had Jeremy Robert Johnson once describe me as I'm what happens when a Klingon rapes an elf.
Oh, Jeremy Robert Johnson. He's for people who don't know, Jeremy Robert Johnson, just, there's no filter. Like, that guy will just say what the fuck is on his mind. But he's a good dude. So, yeah, Jeff's author and publisher. I'll get the bio out of the way. I know you Philistines, we're not going to talk that much book stuff, so don't worry. We're going to probably talk politics, punk, and horror. But let me do the bio. Jeff is a cult favorite author of Shatner Quake, fucking brilliant fucking book. Supergiant Monster Time, Cripple Wolf, and Shatner Quake. Like the literary equivalent to a cult B-horror movie, Burke writes violent, absurd, and funny stories about punks, monster, gore, and trash culture. Everyone normally dies at the end. He's also the head editor of Eraserhead Press, our imprint, Deadite Press, and I'll add he's part of the infamous buddy system.
So, oh, God.
Wait, share this. Before we get going here, because I tweet about the buddy system, and it's like nobody knows what I'm talking about. I even said I want to have Mandy DeSandra do a book called The Butt Buddy System, but I probably won't ever write that. But anyways, explain what happened with the buddy system. I first have to talk about that.
All right. I have reached the level in my career where I now get insane trolls coming out of me, after me. I mean, just like people completely no grasp on reality. Now, this buddy system, which has actually become kind of a meme in the horror scene, that I've seen the HWA mention it now, Brian Keene, of course, and actually even fucking Alex Perdee did a picture that the hashtags were making fun of the buddy system. So somehow it even got on his radar as it was passed around. But the story behind it is,
Bradley Snow?
For a moment, I was like, I posted a random YouTube video of Brian Keene talking about Nick Cutter. And in case anyone's listening and is not aware, both of them are relatively
awesome fucking
successful
writer.
Horror authors, great guys,
Nick
great
Cutter,
authors.
We both love that book, The Troop. I mean, that
Troop
book
was
amazing.
Goddamn fucking
That's
fantastic.
A great fucking book, people, yeah.
So, this random guy, and I'm not going to name him because I don't want anyone accidentally looking up any of the stuff he's written and giving him money and giving him any more attention. But this random guy, who I've never spoken to before, this is all on Facebook, comes on my thread and starts railing up against Brian Keene and Nick Cutter and these other authors, and references something about how horror fiction is so poor because of the buddy system.
The buddy system.
Now, of course, I'm not really understanding what is going on, and I attempted to engage the person rationally at first because I thought, you know, maybe they have a actual critique, and I'm always down for a healthy debate. But it quickly turned out that this guy was just kind of crazy and just spouting rhetoric
this
nonsense.
This is true. This is fucking true.
The buddy system.
Yeah.
And whenever anyone would ask him, like, what is the buddy system, he would then say that that's proof that it exists and that we're part of it. I cannot figure out that logic. So then what kind of really escalated matters is it turns out that this guy is a serial harasser of horror authors.
Oh my
and that
God.
He's been targeting people systematic, and he's even targeted various professional horror organizations like the HWA, and has threatened people, has threatened people's safety. He's shown up at conventions to stalk and confront people. That this guy's like really unhinged.
Yeah.
And somehow I just got my turn on his list. Now, what then really escalated matters is he started threatening lawsuits against me because I'm apparently involved in a conspiracy to keep him from getting published. And he is, quote from him, the greatest living horror author.
Yes, I read that quote.
Not a shred of irony or self-deprecation.
No, he was serious.
And
he reads himself. I remember that. He reads himself. That's all he reads, yeah.
That's the only modern horror he reads is his own horror work. And that I'm obviously involved in a conspiracy designed to keep him out of the horror scene, and that I will be hearing from lawyers soon. And then he promptly blocked me on Facebook, and I do have some people that are still friends with him, and apparently he's still posting status updates ranting about me, and ranting about how he's going to sue me, and ranting about how he's writing a book that's going to expose me, expose Deadeye Press, and expose all the horror industry. Now, I have to be goddamn fucking honest here. I really hope he writes that book.
I hope he does.
I will buy the first fucking copy.
I want to buy this too, Jeff. I mean, you know, but I have to say, this like makes me think, like, we both were poli-sci guys, and I remember reading, I want to say it was like Thomas Friedman, like some fucking like globalization, like cock, like just jerks off about globalization. But I remember him saying, there'll be superimposed individuals. And I remember that phrase, and I've seen that a lot in all types of areas, whether it be, you know, on Twitter, in like Gamergate, or in publishing. Like, I had an experience, I remember, I think I told you about him, Chris Roberts, the one-star review guy.
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and he was like, I'm like, and I learned like a really sad lesson. Like, both of us have kind of a real love for like, kind of punk rock and punk ethos. And I was kind of like, you know, maybe this guy's like kind of like a punk person in publishing. He just kind of wants to fuck with the system. And I just learned in publishing, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. He just kind of like more like the Joker. He just kind of wants to burn things down and kind of laugh at it. And he just went crazy on me because I didn't tweet him in time. Then he started doing all these one-star reviews to my book.
Oh, God.
And I have to admit, because I wrote like a really bad poetry book. Like, it was just don't write a poetry book and self-publish it. That's just my advice. And he wrote like a poem about how bad the poetry book was. And I'm like, this is pretty good, actually.
Actually very clever.
It's like, really clever, the one-star review. I actually wanted to – I was like, you should publish all these. But and it's like – well, Amazon took them all down, which kind of is sad. But it's like, you know –
I had so much fun reading through all of his reviews. That's almost a shame.
Yeah, it is a shame. But it's like – you know, I don't know what's happened to him. Like, he emailed me. He's like, I'm sorry. I was like done because he's like – you know, he tells you you're cum drunk and like all this other shit. And then he just really starts harassing you. But it's like, how do you like, I guess it's just the way it is. There's, you know, and I'm dealing with that now is, you know, I've had some, you know, recent success. There's like these people kind of come out of the woodwork and they fuck with you. And, you know, what do we do? Is there any real solution or we just kind of laugh at it?
I personally just like to drag the people through the mud.
Yeah.
Because what a lot of people don't seem to realize about the internet, they grasp it, but they really don't seem to realize it in practice, is that when you're talking on social media, you're not just talking to the other person you're having a conversation with, you're talking to everybody else.
True.
Everybody else is seeing what you're doing. Every statement is a public statement, even if it's only directed at one person. So when I get these trolls, I try to make it into a public spectacle for like my fans and friends.
It's
to be
fun.
Like, oh, what? Watch me take on this guy.
Yeah.
Now, I have though had one time that I had to block someone that actually was kind of like chilling. In that, one thing I notice is I'm, you know, get it right out of the way. I am an extremely leftist person.
Yeah.
And I very strongly identify as a feminist.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I notice outside of talking about Brian Keene, the one thing they'll get trolls coming out of the woodwork after me is any mention of feminism or feminist issues online. I can talk about – I can shit-talk cops. I can talk about race issues. I can talk about anti-war issues. No one really gives a shit until I say something that can be interpreted as a pro-feminist statement, and then they come out. I had one guy on Twitter that his account – was an account connected with Campus Watch, that Neil Borowitz right-wing group.
Yeah,
who,
Campus Watch.
When I started shit-talking Gamergate one day, he just started then sending me about 10 messages a day. And I didn't respond to anything. He was sending me private messages on Twitter, and I just didn't respond at all. They started sending me 10 a day, and this kept up for a week. And then when I finally had enough, was he tried looking into trying to dig up dirt on me online, which isn't really that easy to do. Yeah. I'm very control over what information is out there about me. But he could find out that I had a cat, Squishy. He started sending me threats directed at my cat.
That's fucked up. Yeah, I would be livid if somebody did it to my cats. That's
that
weird,
kind
yeah.
of like crosses a line there. And that's the only time that I've actually... No, that's not true. I've had one other occasion. I had a guy on Facebook friend me and immediately start sending me private messages over, I'm going to find out where you live and come and get you. And my first thought was, like, is this one of my friends fucking with me? Like, is this Cameron or Vince doing something? Cameron Pierce or Vince Kramer, bizarre authors for those unaware, who are friends of mine. I'm like, is it one of them fucking with me and just playing like a bad joke? And I went to the guy's account and there's, you know, personal pictures, personal information that goes back years. So this was a real person who just randomly decided, I want to just start sending that guy threats. And as far as what to do about it, I truly have no idea.
Yeah.
It sucks to say, but it just really seems like if one's going to aspire to have any sort of public presence, and like you and me, we're fucking nobodies.
Yeah.
Really, nobody knows who
we
are. We may have had some success with some little niche things, but in the grand scheme of the world, we are fucking nobodies. But even at our
we're
level,
ageless.
Get it. Yeah, exactly.
We're ageless,
But we still get these harassers. If you just put yourself out in the public in any way, there's people who seem like, and I'm convinced it's all rooted from a area of their own failings of life.
Yes.
That their own frustrations over not accomplishing what they want or not getting the type of attention they want. I don't know what to say about it.
Yeah,
though.
No,
that's the problem.
You mentioned two subjects, and I wanted to talk about those two. I also am, and a lot of people don't know that, because I was, you know, I say certain things, but I am a male feminist as well, and you'll get a lot of shit when you say that, you know, you get a lot of shit, and you mentioned Gamergate too. There's definitely two subjects I want to talk about with.
Oh, I would love to talk about Gamergate.
we'll go with Gamergate first. I want to ask you first a question, and I've thought about this. I kind of like, I'm very curious about like internet ideology. It really fascinates me. I mean, we both have, I know you have a political science background, I do as well, and I'm very interested in just ideology. And I notice like there's almost like, they're kind of like ideological cults, but they're online instead of meeting in like, you know, a basement. Do you think Gamergate's a cult?
I wouldn't describe it as a cult, but I would definitely describe it as like a reactionary ideology.
Yeah.
I would definitely describe it as like the political version of a cult. And just so it's clear, when we're specifically talking about Gamergate, you get it on both the right and the left.
Yes.
And it's all the loonies that in the past, no one would be able to get them to listen to them. But because of the internet has given everyone a voice.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's also proven that not everyone deserves a voice. And so we get ramifications like this. Like, remember how there used to be all those Lyndon LaRouche campaigners outside the post office? I haven't seen one of those fuckers for years.
Yeah.
And that's because they're all over Twitter and Facebook and Reddit.
Yeah.
And that's where they all went nuts.
They are nuts. I mean, I see it a lot. I mean, I just, you know, mention one, if I mention, just put the hashtag Gamergate in, and it, you know, it's interesting too. Like I posted, it's very weird too. Cause I think there's like both the left and the right. They want this kind of gang mentality, and I hate it. I want to have my own individual thoughts. So I shared like the guy who's responsible for Gamergate. And I'm like, I hate to share this. It was about, what's his name's, we both love him, Eli Roth. And they wrote Breitbart wrote a piece like defending, you know, this horror movie saying, you know, the left doesn't like it. And I'm like, and I kind of agreed with it to some extent. I'm like, I'm kind of disgusted that I'm sharing this right wing Gamergate person. And they all loved it. These guys, like, welcome to the club. Well, join us in our fight. And I'm like, I'm not on your fucking side. I'm just agreeing with one article you guys wrote. It's just like I felt like I was getting recruited, you know.
And I think how they interpreted that Eli Roth, how the Eli Roth movie is being interpreted.
Yeah, it's.
I noticed like Gamergate and those type of reactionary conservatives are embracing it as being a strike against the left wing. The left wing's getting, the leftists are getting insulted by it.
Yeah.
Eli Roth is a very leftist person.
Yes, he is.
And he makes fucking horror movies. Horror movies are supposed to push buttons.
Absolutely.
And he found a good button, which no one's pushed. For anyone listening that's not aware, we're referring to Eli Roth's upcoming The Green Inferno.
Yes, looks
so
good.
Which is about a bunch of, like, internet do-gooders. As he described it in the past, hashtag activists. Or as some people would say now, and I hate saying the phrase, social justice warrior.
Mm-hmm.
But a bunch of those people that don't really know what's going on in the real world and take it upon themselves to travel to the Amazon to try to protect a native tribe, and they end up getting captured and then tortured and eaten by the tribe.
I love that.
And that's just like what Eli Roth kind of does. That's what most horror directors do. It's a very original, good concept. But I don't really take it as endorsing or disowning either political side.
Yeah. It's more of just, it's just kind of a return to just, it's just, you know, horror does have a morality. It's kind of like, how do I say it? Like, it's just, I watched Eli's first, his like real kind of breakout, not Cabin Fever, but, oh, help me out here, man. I'm. Yeah, I watched that, and I kind of see them as companion pieces with each other. You kind of have, like, in Hostel, you have these bros who are just like, we're going to fucking dominate Europe. And then now you have this other movie where it's, like, well-meaning Americans who go there, and they both just kind of, like, the world's a dangerous place, basically. You can't really dominate it or fix it. I mean, that's kind of the message I'm seeing. I've got to still see Green Inferno. But,
yeah, obviously the movie's not out yet, so we don't actually know.
We don't really know, but we kind
of
know the gist.
It looks like to me as well. Yeah. It looks like to be a complete reversal of what the basic plot line of Hostel is, which is like a creative person to do. That sounds like a great idea.
Absolutely.
But I want to backtrack to Gamergate, since as much as I love Eli Roth, I'm ranting about how much I love him. But yeah, I'm on their shit list.
Yeah.
I know that there's like, I've been flagged as a kind of Gamergate troll because I must admit, I fucking love getting really wasted. Like when I'm bored at night, getting really wasted and just posting like, things to incite them on Twitter with the hashtag Gamergate, and they just come out of the fucking woodwork. And I have so much fun with just trying to like mess with them and troll them. And I've also turned into a little bit of a game that I see how quickly I can turn it into a conversation about my cat and start posting cat pictures to them and then talking about how cute my cat is. I've been successful at this several times.
We should have joined together before people knew that, you know, the Mandy DeSandra, for the, you know, people who listen, you know who Mandy DeSandra is. Before she got famous, I trolled Gamergate guys with Mandy DeSandra, and I kind of emasculated them. They got really upset. They got really upset. It was kind of mean. It was pretty shitty, actually. I can't remember some of the stuff I said, but I made some of these guys feel pretty bad, you know, but it was fun, though. I have to admit, I really had a good time doing it, but yeah, trolling Gamergate guys is pretty fun, you know. So.
And they're so easy about it, and they're so sensitive. Like, their big talking point is how everyone gets outraged so easily, and everyone gets so easily offended. But honest to God, they get offended just as
easily,
not more so.
Yeah, really easily.
And, like, also why I have this kind of, like, a vested interest, like, against them.
Yeah.
Is I view it as the conservative movement in recent years, especially since the George W. Bush presidency, has basically completely lost its, any weight it had with young people.
Yeah.
That the Republicans are just dead amongst young people.
That is very true.
Now, with Gamergate, I think that this is, when it first started, the right wing saw this as an opportunity to make inroads on young on young men specifically.
Yeah.
And if you look at the people endorsing Gamergate, you have Christina Sommers.
Yes, I know who she is. Yes.
Bill Kristol just endorsed it. Rare Art endorsing it. It's all like extremist right-wing groups. And there's no notable leftists at all endorsing it. And a lot of the Gamergate people are actually too young and too politically unaware, I should say, and or politically unaware, to understand who these people are that are backing them.
And I have their histories. Yeah,
I
have to say, Jeff, like, I remember, you know, I went on, like, MIA for about, you know, 6 months. I just, you know, a lot of people who listen, I just was gone. I just, like, kind of hit away from the earth, and I come back, and I kind of find all these things, like Gamergate now, and there's this one guy, we're like, Twitter friends, and he was like a big leftist. He would like, you know, he would, because I'm like a moderate in a lot of ways. And he would like, you know, you don't understand. And I come back and he's like, he's just gone to the right and he's all about Gamergate. I mean, I have to laugh. I mean, I see a lot of people in their bios like Gamergate made a man out of me, which is really, I mean, it's like something you'd see in like, I mean, I love political satires. It's just like, I felt like I came back to like real life satire, but it's fucking real. Yeah.
Well, Gamergate is almost like living satire. Yeah. I'm going to point to the whole, there's an aspect of Gamergate called Not Your Shield.
Yes.
Where they ask the people of color and the women who support them to organize under a name called Not Your Shield, as in implying that to liberals that you can't speak for us, but yet Gamergate uses literally a group, Not Your Shield, as a shield from criticisms that they're feminists, that they're anti-feminists, or that they're, you know, anti-woman, I should say, because they are anti-feminists.
They are anti-feminists.
Anti-woman and anti-person of color. They use, like, that is just such amazing disconnect over that they can't see that. And there's also the whole thing, the movement was founded. Well, first off, it was named by Adam Baldwin, who was the guy from, I can't remember the name of the character he played, but he was in the TV show Firefly. Jane.
Yeah, yeah.
He was Jane in Firefly, who's a notorious right-wing asshole. Mm-hmm. He named the group, and the whole thing even originally came from a ex-boyfriend writing a blog complaining about his like ex-girlfriend, which most of it turned out to be factually incorrect anyway, that, and this is also the part that like really hurts me. I, in a weird way, almost want to support Gamergate, because if you just take them at their words over ethics and journalism, being against corruption in media, these are all viewpoints I support.
Yeah, I do as
but
well.
How they're going about it, that's not being shown in any sort of actions at all.
No, it's not. It's just a way, I think, to kind of, I don't know. It's like a lot of people, you know, you were talking earlier about, you know, people that just felt like they've not, you know, got where they wanted to go in life. And I see that with a lot of these guys, you know. It's just, it's not the well-adjusted. Though on Facebook, I had one of my friends. He's actually a decent guy. You guys got into an argument about Gamergate. But most of these guys I see...
Oh, I remember what you were talking
about. Yeah, he's a decent dude. He's like, I'm sorry, man, I didn't mean... I'm like, don't worry about it. It's no fucking big deal. But it's like, a lot of these guys are just like, you know, it's all these guys that just kind of feel, I think, left... It's weird. It's like the white males that got left behind. That's what I see a lot of with Gamergate. And, you know, I don't know. They're kind of finding solace in each other, and it gives them this – it's weird. It's like a quest you want in a video game, but it's like – instead, it's on Twitter, and it's something that really doesn't matter or make sense or, you know, it's just really not – I don't know. I mean, I'm just like – I like video, but it's not that – I'm not a big gamer, but it just felt silly. I didn't understand it for, like, the first month when I, like, kind of know – I'm like, what the – I don't get this. Like, who cares? Like, you know, but – yeah,
I'm a big gamer, which is also another reason I'm invested in this.
Yeah,
because I love video games because I argue they are a brand new artistic medium, and we have not seen yet what the medium's capable of. It's still in its infancy. Like, people forget that when film was created, it took over a decade before the first, what we would think of as a movie, was even released.
That's true,
like,
yeah.
It took 10 years for them to even figure out, like, hey, we can tell a story with this thing.
Yeah.
Much less how many decades it took before we started getting what we would view as actually, like, a polished motion picture. And I argue that video games are still in that early stage. And I think it's, like, really special that we can actually see a new artistic medium get birthed and grow. That only happens at a few select points in all of human history. You can count on, like,
that's a good point.
Don't need all of your fingers to count all the artistic mediums that exist. And video games, the most recent one. And one of the main things about about Gamergate is they don't want video games to be taken seriously. And I disagree with that so much. I want them to be taken seriously. I want it to be an art form. I want it to be something that can aspire to just be more than an interactive action movie. Now, it's not like the popular big-budget action video games are ever going to go away.
No.
Just like, you know, we still have Transformer movies coming out, and, like, San Andreas came out this year. I actually saw just last week, and that movie was fucking awesome. The Rock versus an Earthquake.
That actually sounds pretty fucking entertaining.
Yeah, but just as I love my brain-dead action, I also like, you know, art house and indie movies. I like things that try to be experimental and take new approaches to the medium.
I have to say,
seems not want that to exist at all.
Yeah, I'm not a big, but I actually like really binge out in video games, so I like just kind of have to stay away from right now. But I never really saw them in that kind of movie metaphor where there's some that, you just like an action movie you really enjoy, like Transformers. But yeah, there are some like art films that we can just kind of geek out about that are different but unique. That's a good point. I never thought of video games that way. That's interesting.
And there's a handful of video games I'd point to that are actually like achieving what the medium is capable of. Just for anyone, like for yourself or anyone listening that's curious, like, I'd argue the first Silent Hill game was actually the first video game that you could actually describe as a work of art, because it was the first video game that emotion was the entire driving role of it. Not action, not graphics, not anything else with the actual gameplay, but invoking an emotion of fear and unease in the player, which had never been attempted before. Also, Shadow of the Colossus is the other one that I point to, which it has almost no story in the game until you get to the end, and I'm not going to spoil it for anyone that hasn't played it, but it kind of takes the framework of playing a video game and completely turns it on its head, that when you finish the game, you suddenly realize that there was a story going on the entire time that you just weren't aware was being told. I mean, literally, when the ending of that game came up, I just sat there in my chair with my jaw just dropped. I was like, this is just an absolute, like, artistic masterpiece. And for the record, like, the Museum of Modern Art in Washington, D.C. agrees with me. They've just started incorporating video games into their collection, which Shadow of the Colossus was one of the ones they brought in, and they didn't include Silent Hill. I disagree with them on not including that, but...
Why do you think there's this, like...
It's a new art form, and...
Why are people against that, then? If you are a gamer, why shouldn't this thing you're passionate about be taken seriously? I don't understand that.
Well, that's the thing, is we wanted games to be taken seriously. Like, the game, when I say we, I mean, like, gamers.
Yeah.
Back in the 90s, when there was Jack Thompson, who infamously tried to bring forward into, like, the Senate over passing laws purely aimed at censoring video games.
Yeah.
Who, I wanted to point out, has endorsed Gamergate, and they've accepted him. Just let that sink in for a fucking moment.
Yeah. Like, what the fuck? Like, this thing's just like I mean, the political science part of me, and just like this thing's really nuts to me. It's fascinating, honestly. Like, just the... I don't know. It kind of blows my mind. This is really strange.
I think they're worried about it because it's a lot of people who aren't used to thinking about art in a critical manner. And now video games actually are finally starting to get taken seriously. And so that means there's criticism written about them. And the criticism that, like, Gamergate is so against is, honest to God, the exact same criticism that's been going on in literature for centuries, in the visual arts for, you know, probably thousands of years. That's been going on in movies for decades. It's just finally moved on now into video games, and they're not used to that.
Yeah,
and they misinterpret criticism as attempts to censor or even a discussion.
That blows my mind, man.
Like, this thing is weird means that, like, this thing is weird as in, like, a bad way. Like, I don't like seeing this trope as meaning you're a bad person because you like it.
That's like, just, wow. That, I'm just, no, yeah, I mean, I just, as somebody who's, like, been involved in the art, like, other arts, like music, I've done music for a long time, done writing a lot. It's just, like, criticism's kind of part of the deal. It's just, I'm more happy with just somebody's talking about my work, even if it's negative. That's still a good thing in a lot of ways to me, because it's like they're giving a fuck to just talk about it. Yeah, this, it's a weird. I have a way different ideology and just mentality than this group. It's really kind of blows my mind.
And I mean, us as horror fans, we like, this has been going on for horror for
I'm used to it.
There's been critics that accuse horror fans of being misogynistic or of being
But I don't take that stuff personally.
Horror fans are like, fuck it, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
And then when people go nuts over a particular horror movie, that just makes all the horror fans rush to it.
Yeah.
And I want to point out that, like, one thing that's good or, you know, good or bad, depending upon how you view it, about Americans, when you tell us don't watch something, don't read something, don't do something, as a whole, we run straight through to it. So I don't know what they're concerned about with criticism actually damaging the media. On top of that, the only reason I know who was it, Anita Sarkeesian and Zoe Quinn are, is because of Gamergate. I literally had never heard of them before.
That's the only reason why I know these people are. Yeah.
They literally also don't understand that by dedicating their entire movement by focusing on bringing down, notice their two most dedicated targets are women, bringing down commentators, and by doing that, they're actually just opening up more people to their ideas.
Yeah. It's I don't know. It's really not a good movement when I just look at it on effectiveness. I don't know. I mean, Gamergate.
I don't think it's ever going to go anywhere. I don't think it's going to go away, honestly.
No, it's here.
The very fact that it's lasted this long, like,
it's here.
It's for the foreseeable future, for many years to come, I'm sure, there's going to be a Gamergate. But, you know, it's the same thing that's now happening in the science fiction scene. There's the sad puppies.
Oh, the sad puppies.
It's basically the exact same thing as Gamergate, except in science fiction and fantasy literature.
I have to say, with the sad puppies, I got, like, tempted, because I'm like, it would be cool to win a Hugo and just pretend, like, pretend to be. I had, like, this whole idea, like, the rock people that live on Galtosphere. Like, I came up with this whole thing. I was like, I'm going to pretend to be a new science fiction author and just write this, like, really plain, kind of Ayn Rand, like, message tale about the rock people of Galtosphere. And how we conquer the takers of space, but I just don't have time to write that. But it's just all these movements are pretty crazy. They're pretty crazy. I want to talk a little bit about feminism as well, because it's like Gamergate. They definitely, like, attack feminism, and there's a lot of, like, different ideologies I noticed with feminism. Like, I consider myself a feminist. I actually, the person I got into the biggest fight with was a fellow male feminist, because he didn't like how a show portrayed African American. Like, he thought they were just misogynistic, and I'm like, well, that kind of sets, that makes sense as a character. And we got in a big, he blocked me and everything, and I'm just like, what, there's so much infighting. What would you consider, what is your definition of feminism?
My definition of feminism is just straight up treating men and men and women as equals. Yeah. And to anyone that may be listening to this and be like, well, why don't you call yourself egalitarian? It's because feminism has a century-long history behind it and a movement with many great thinkers that I respect and I agree with, where egalitarian is literally just a more recent term that's only used as a way to dismiss feminism.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, no, and that's how I feel. Just both sexes should be equal. And I don't know why this is not, I guess this is another thing where I'm just like, some things that seem very simple to me, I don't know why they're like loaded and just make people really act crazy. And then there's like, you're not feminist enough or you're too little.
That's exactly what I was about to bring up. So now we were shit-talking Gamergate, but I mentioned it before about how those internet movements exist on both the left and the right. There's this era of like extreme feminism, extreme anti-racism that exists on a lot of the internet.
Yeah.
But it's just really purely there for page clicks. They know that it will rile people up, and it's people just looking for problems, which also aided in stuff like Gamergate developing, because Gamergate kind of took all these people at face value and as being representative of movements as a whole, rather than just being one either loon or con artist that's just trying to get your clicks for advertisers.
Yeah, okay, all right. You mentioned or con artists.
Or Jezebel or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, this might be cynical, but I'm a cynical guy, so I don't care. I kind of notice on both sides, I'm seeing a rise of what I guess I would call the cause artist. Like the guy I got into a fight with.
I love that term. Yes, I love that. Cause artist.
And I looked him up and I'm like, I'm not going to say his name, but he like blogs for the Huffington Post. He's like, I'm a straight male, but I love feminists. And I like looked and like these girls got pissed because he like used his clout basically to hook up with girls, other feminists. And I'm like, I could kind of see through this. I'm like, this person is just using this cause to promote himself. And I'm seeing that on the right, too. I see there's, like, stars now because of Gamergate. I can never say her name. Michelle Malkin?
Michelle Malkin.
Yes, thank you. She wrote about internment. And she's become, like, a star of the right because she wrote, like, yeah, Japanese people should have been. They should have been interned. And then she just writes more shit. So it's like I'm really seeing this rise on both sides of just people who are like say the most obnoxious things, but you get the extremes of both sides just support them, and it's pretty shitty, honest. And I'm seeing it for a lot of different important causes. I don't even want to go there for some of the other stuff I'm seeing. I'll just keep it at politics, but I'm seeing it like real personal stuff people are like using to promote themselves. They're not really good writers or artists either. They're kind of shitty. Oh.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
And also, like, it shuts down any sort of real possibility at solution.
Yeah.
And yes. Before I was a writer, before I was involved in writing and publishing, I used to work in politics.
Yes.
I worked on political campaigns behind the scenes. The reason I quit doing that was it was so disheartening, because what you see working behind the scenes is everyone agrees on actually everything. Everyone wants more freedom. Everyone wants more liberty.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to have someone, wants an individual to be more control of their life. We all just disagree on the path we take to get there.
Yeah.
And it was so frustrating, like trying to be in politics and just having someone get shut down because they're a Democrat or because they're a Republican. It's like, no, we all agree, but there's like these artificial teams that prevent us from doing anything. And now because of the internet and how things go viral, it's kind of heightened those teams that you have to be the most on both sides. You have to be the most radical. You have to keep up with all the latest talking points on your side and make sure you adhere to them all.
Yeah.
And I don't really know what's to be done about it.
No, I don't know either.
It's odd though. On a positive side, at least it's having people become more engaged in issues than say they were in the 90s.
That's a good point.
I mean, that is like a really positive. We may not like how immediately rash people go to it, but you know what? Maybe this is almost like our culture's like teenage radical years. I know I was like an asshole radical political know-it-all when I was a teenager, thinking I had like everything figured out, and then I later realized like, oh shit, there's actually no answer to anything. That's why this all exists.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I went through the same thing. We both have a similar background. I wanted to work in campaigns. I also thought about working for the State Department, and I'm just like, this is all bullshit. Like, I met, you know, I'm like, this is fucking bullshit. This is not what I want to do. Yeah, it was really like an existential rough moment in my life. Yeah, kind of realizing most politics is bullshit. Most politicians, they might have better hearts than others, but like, you know, just the politicians themselves, but they're still politicians. That I've kind of lost some of that idealism, but yet I really still follow and love politics. I think you're kind of similar. You don't vote, do you?
No, I do not vote.
Yeah, I don't vote either.
And I can, to anyone being like, you care about politics and you don't vote, my response, I have two responses to it. One is watch the movie Wag the Dog.
Oh, such a great, yes.
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 The scene towards the end when everyone that worked on the campaign is sitting around the pool and they all are asking each other if they voted and they all realize they forgot to vote.
Yeah.
That's kind of sums up my point. And two, I love the old Yippie slogan, why vote? It only encourages them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
like, if there's someone I would really believe in, I would vote for them.
Yeah.
But quite frankly, you know, I don't see it. I love, though, following politics, because also, even though I don't vote, I want to be aware of what's going on in my country. And oh, actually, one real quick. Actually, a third point also why not to vote. This is a great lie in politics that no one really wants to get out that works on campaigns or runs for office. Your vote actually doesn't matter. Votes only matter in large groups. Outside of extremely local elections, which can be made a very dark argument for voting right there, but on any term of state or national level, your vote does not matter. If you choose a set of election, the results will be exactly the same. Yeah. No national state election has ever been decided on one vote. But following this stuff because I want to make sure I know what's going on, what's actually happening, what's really being discussed, what do the policies and debates really mean?
Yeah, for me, I find a lot of it interesting, even though it's bullshit. I think you even said this on like Facebook or some social media. It's kind of like sports, and that's, I kind of enjoy it that way.
I like to compare it to pro wrestling.
Yes, perfect. I love wrestling as a kid. Guys, yes,
the outcome is always predetermined.
It's
pro wrestling.
It's definitely pro wrestling. That's a perfect analogy for it. So.